Your Honor, to may please the court, to conclude the argument I was making a moment ago, I just had two final points that I wanted to touch upon. With regard to the usage of the term the Organized Crime Bureau in this matter, it is the case that the defendant was offered a limiting instruction in this matter and did not allow that to happen in this case. But
when you say didn't allow, what happened? Because there was a discussion about the limiting instruction and then just no one brought it up again or didn't raise it again?
The court offered to, or specifically brought up itself, the possibility of giving a delivering instruction in this case. My recollection is that defense counsel said, I'm going to think about that. And then the defense counsel never did bring that up again.
So there wasn't a discussion about defense counsel not wanting to further highlight the issue?
I don't believe the defense counsel got into it on the record. Specifically on that point, defense counsel today brought up the idea that this was strategic. I would point out that in the defense's summation at trial, defense counsel did weaponize the term of the Organized Crime Bureau itself in bringing up this name. And it seems that the argument the defense counsel was making was trying to imply a lack of candor on the part of the state's law enforcement officer witnesses by making the argument that despite being members of an organized crime bureau and the presumed expertise that carries, they were not able to sufficiently testify with regard to fingerprint evidence. It would seem.
Just to clarify, before trial, defendant did object to any reference to the quote organized crime bureau.
Yes.
And the court overruled that objection, correct?
That is the case, yes.
Usually when a judge or lawyers ask for or discuss a limited instruction, it's because they're trying to address a problem or a concern. Did the judge express what concern or problem the judge had about why a limited instruction may be necessary?
I'm sorry.
Did the judge explain why a limited instruction may be necessary?
I believe in this case, the judge expressed the offer to deliver a limiting instruction in this case in response to defense counsel bringing up the possibility of giving one. I don't believe there was any discussion on the record about any underlying strategic decision being made by defense counsel at the time.
Do you think the failure to follow up on the limiting instruction impacts the standard that we use to look at whether this is, does it change a harmless error to a plain error standard?
It seems that it invokes some level of invited error in this case where it was.
But they objected and the court overruled their objection. And so regardless of why they may or may not have wanted a limited instruction, they did object and the court did overrule. Invited error would be if they had asked the court to allow someone to say organized crime bureau. They did the opposite.
Right. Then to the extent that the defense counsel appears from the record to be the reason why a limiting instruction did not occur in this case, and then defense counsel went on to utilize the term itself, it seems that this undercuts the idea that there was a prejudice that would have existed as a result of any implications from the usage of the term. This also goes to the defendant's arguments with regard to cumulative error in this case. The standard is whether the jury was diverted from a rational appraisal of the evidence. It seems that in this case, we don't have to speculate as to whether the jury was or was not diverted from a rational appraisal. We can see from the fact that they did acquit the defendant where they found the state's proofs to be lacking, that this was a discriminating jury that very closely looked at the evidence and made a decision with regard to or without regard to biases or notions that the defendant was associated with anything that could be inferred from the name of the unit in this matter. Unless your honors have any additional questions, that does conclude my argument.
Thank you. Ms. Gifford, brief rebuttal.
Yes, just a few points. I'd like to touch upon the search warrant testimony first, because I counted there were 7 references to search and arrest warrants, and this blatantly violated the pretrial order and the spirit of the pretrial order. The prosecutor shouldn't have elicited this testimony in any way and should have coached the witnesses to say lawful search in accordance with the pretrial order. Regarding Mr. Butler being the target, my adversary said that the jury heard wiretaps before the warrant, hearing that he was the target of the search warrant of 16D, but those wiretaps didn't connect him to 16D, which is why the testimony about him being the target of that search was so prejudicial. Regarding the Organized Crime Bureau, I think that the record does show defense counsel's strategic concerns. It was page three on 3T27-29. That's where defense counsel says, let me think about a limiting instruction and see if it highlights it more than I would want it to be. Then I think it, the fact that the prosecutor used this, sorry, that the defense attorney used this term in summation to try to use it to his advantage after it had already been admitted over his objection, also I think a reasonable strategic choice. And so as in Williams, where the limiting instruction wasn't given for out of concern that it would underscore the prejudice more than no limiting instruction, the same is true here, and it should be reviewed under a harmless versus plain error standard. And then I just want to sum up by emphasizing that
with respect to the Organized Crime Bureau, you're here on behalf of the public defender today, of course, and you're arguing in a particular case. Are you suggesting that this court could rule in your favor and say, cannot use Organized Crime Bureau as a designation in this case, and that it would somehow not apply to all other cases as well?
I think the biggest issue with using Organized Crime Bureau in this case was the disconnect between organized crime and the charges that Mr. Butler was on trial for. I think that if, you know, someone were charged with, gang-related offenses, that maybe the use of the or organized crime offenses, that perhaps the use of the term organized crime unit would be okay and would be less prejudicial. Again, if they had said, I work for the narcotics unit, Mr. Butler was on trial for a narcotics crime, I don't think that would have been a problem.
So oftentimes law enforcement officers begin an investigation not knowing where that investigation will lead and what charges will result. So the fact that the investigation began with the Organized Crime Bureau, but didn't result in gang-related charges, I understand what you're saying about the disconnect, but should it be the case that in every case, the trial courts should look to what unit investigated, were the charges the same, or did the charges fall with it specifically within what one would expect the charges to be with that unit? Because, I mean, there were a large number of people arrested at the same time. He was charged with conspiracy charges. So it does seem a little nebulous how that sort of rule would work.
I think I'm not asking for any sort of bright line rule. I think it's really like a case specific question. And I think it's going to be probably the rare case, as it was in this case, where there's such a prejudicial disconnect between the name of the unit and the crimes that the defendant was on trial for. I don't think that necessarily it would be appropriate for prosecutors to say they work for the major crime unit in a low level possession case. That
is it really going to be that simple? Suppose you have the sex trafficking unit hypothetically investigating a case where they come short of those charges but come up with some others. We're going to require judges to do this analysis in all cases of that sort?
I think it would be pretty clear, cases where there is such a strong disconnect such that it could really prejudice the jury. Again, I don't think this is going to typically be the case. And I don't think it would always amount to reversible error. I think that in this case, really, the disconnect and then combined with all of the other improper testimony and, comments and opening statement about the wire, everything really built off of each other, and the organized crime unit was just kind of part of that larger problem.
You're not asking for a holding that it would be plain error such that a court would have to address it sua sponte. You're just saying in the context of this case where it was objected to and that objection was overruled, that was error.
Yes, and I think that by this court, I would ask this court to offer some guidance that the disconnect in this case was problematic, and that might put, trial attorneys and judges on alert that if there's a similar disconnect that could be prejudicial, there might be an easy way for officers in that case to testify about, the broader, office that they work for without giving a potentially prejudicial description of the unit that they work for.
And the idea would be that these could be motions in limine before a trial to ask that these be taken care of in specific circumstances, not necessarily a per se ruling from the court on all cases.
That's correct, Your Honor.
So in some cases, an officer is going to be able to introduce what unit they work for. But in other cases, based on this value judgment, the judge is going to have to preclude the officer from introducing what unit they work for because of this disconnect standard that you think that we should be putting forward on this case.
That's correct, Your Honor. I think that if this court were to find that it was problematic, the disconnect between the the name of the unit and the charged crimes, and that prejudiced the defendant here. That would then put, I think, defense attorneys on alert that they could move in limine to preclude officers from testifying about the units that they work for in similar cases where there's a disconnect between the unit and the charged crimes, and the name of the unit could be prejudicial.
Please go ahead.
If your honors have no further questions on that, I just wanted to make one last comment about extra evidentiary references and comparisons generally. These comparisons are almost never appropriate, as the risk of prejudice is just too high. But I would ask this court to really emphasize, in State versus Williams, this court said that prosecutors should walk a fine line when making extra evidentiary comparisons between, you know, the defendant and someone the jury might associate with violence and guilt. I think maybe a fine line wasn't the strong enough wording. I think extreme caution would be a more proper guidance to prosecutors in terms of how they should be thinking about using these extra evidentiary comparisons.
Thank you, counsel. We'll take the matter under advisement.